Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for joining us here at the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook. When it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. Aaron, another week in the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook for us. Emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com, or you can send them to us on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/baseballamerica. Aaron and I were both tweeting at college baseball games this weekend. Oh, I think my phone did not die. I missed a tweet. My Matt White tweet is just out in the ether somewhere.
That was one of the best tweets of the weekend.
Didn't appear to go anywhere, but we both tweeted a little Duke, Virginia. You watched a little bit more of the games. You did not have a two-year-old in tow.
It does make it easier.
I did get to catch a little bit of both those games. We got to see a couple of top 10 teams. Our number one team, Virginia, still number one. Texas, our number two team, still number two. Arizona State, our number three team, still number three. All three various degrees of impressiveness this weekend, Aaron. I guess let's briefly touch on the Wahoos at number one. Sweeping Duke at Duke, really no great shakes there. John Shire did not suit up for the Blue Devils, nor did Kyle Singler or Nolan Smith, so Duke's firepower was low. But Duke not as good as they were last year. Virginia did have to outlast Marcus Stroman, an exciting freshman Duke has on the mound.
Yeah.
And the big thing seems to be that Jarrett Parker has heated up a little bit. And Virginia, I guess the separator, not necessarily this is not why Virginia is ranked ahead of Texas, but Texas is pitching clearly best in the country. Virginia's edge would seem to be its offense, and with Jarrett Parker getting hot, their offense is even better than it was the first half of the year.
I think you can make a strong case that Virginia has the deepest, most versatile, maybe most dangerous offense in the country. And they're not the most powerful offense in the country, but clearly they've got power. And boy, was it on display on Saturday. Parker hit two home runs. One of them was just an absolute mammoth shot to right field.
That was an awe-inspiring
building beyond the bleachers out there.
That was an awe-inspiring home run. Although Matt Myers, former BA staffer, says that he saw Craig Brazell hit that building once in AAA.
How about
so
that?
Hat tip to Matty Myers. I can't believe I missed that home run. Anyway, bad Matt Myers impersonation, and the physical part really doesn't translate over the podcast. Anyway.
Steven Procia also has obviously big power. Those are the two guys that really provide a lot of the thump in the middle of that lineup, and he had a nice day also. Hit one off the monster out there and another one over it and onto that building out there on the left field. So,
yeah,
I mean, those two guys are strong, and you know, if they're heating up, that's a good sign for Virginia. That's the thing is, I don't think Virginia, you know, they've been really consistent. They're 39-9 right now.
Right.
They're in first place in the ACC. They've won all but one series this year.
Inexplicable series loss at NC State, basically.
At NC State, yeah. This team hasn't actually, to me, peaked yet. I mean, Jarrett Parker wasn't Jarrett Parker for the first 9 weeks of the season.
Right. They still haven't really 100% settled their Sunday starter.
I mean, no, it's Cody Winarski. He's been pretty consistent. He's been pretty good.
Okay. Just seemed like they gave up a little bit. Again, their Sunday scores are a little sloppy.
They have been at times, but you know, lately, I mean, he's been he went eight plus innings last week, I think, only gave up one run. I mean, he's been pretty good. I think that's not a concern. I mean, I do think the bullpen depth maybe is an issue a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They use a lot of Wilson and Errico. Those are clearly their two guns back there. But you know, I think this team is pretty complete. I mean, that
great outing. Great outing on Saturday by Bullet Bob.
Yeah.
Complete game, Robert Morey.
He was terrific, and you know, Holtson gave him a complete game the day before. So I mean, their starting pitching also seems to be hitting its stride. So I mean, are they better than Texas? I don't know. I mean, at this point, it seems very clear that Virginia, Texas, and Arizona State are the three best teams in the country in some order.
Yeah.
And you can argue over what order they should be, but we had Virginia ahead, and so we're certainly not going to lower them after this week.
Right.
They also beat Coastal Carolina midweek, so I mean it's
also impressive.
Texas has been incredibly impressive. They won 21 in a row now? 20 in a row?
20 in a row, I believe.
That's insane.
Fourth team this year to have a 20-game win streak, which I got to tell you, I can't remember a year ever like that. But obviously, Arizona State, UConn's ended this week, Texas, UCLA. UCLA's the one team that hasn't kept it up, really. The other ones,
Well,
we'll see about UConn. They're just ended. They went 2-2 this week. Aaron, Texas just never gives up any runs. I mean, their ERA is like in the low twos, and it seems like it's a different hero. I don't know about hero, but it's a different guy every week who's impressive. One week it'll be Taylor Youngman. One week it'll be Chance Ruffin out of the bullpen. right now, Cole Green's the hot hand, and you can't get any hotter than Cole Green has been.
30 and two-thirds scoreless innings before he gave up an unearned run in the ninth against Oklahoma. That would have been his third straight shutout.
that's crazy.
That's insane. But
and these are all weekend games. These are all conference series. This guy's not doing it. I mean, granted, the Big 12 is not strong this year, but 30 and two-thirds scoreless on conference weekends is just almost unheard of.
I can't – just the thought of Texas having a 2.17 staff ERA against metal bats in college baseball is just – it's just mind-boggling. That's just mind-boggling.
I think that's a good way to put it. It just, you really would not – even as much talent as we knew they had coming into the year, all of us saw in Omaha last year, you knew all these guys were coming back with the exception of Austin Wood out of their bullpen. It really kind of – we knew – Texas would be very good. Heck, we tried to put him on the cover of the college preview issue. We tried to get a big cover photo, and it just didn't work out. You know, we knew they'd be that their pitching would be that good. Did you have any idea, Aaron, even though we knew that they were better than the rest of the league by a lot, that they would be seven games up in the Big 12 at this point? I mean, we only had one Big 12 team in our preseason top 25, so I guess we had an inkling it could be this kind of a season where Texas could really run away and hide from the rest of the league. Still stark to see it in the actual standings.
Yeah, they're a runaway train. I mean, it's that's you know, they're 19-2 in the league. They just set the Big 12 record for consecutive wins, 17 straight.
Wow, I didn't realize that was 17
straight
in the league.
Conference. It's remarkable. I mean, there's what can you say? I mean, they're you know, I don't think they're a great offensive team, but they're certainly a good enough offensive team. I mean, they didn't score a lot of runs this weekend, but Baylor actually has some arms. I mean, that's one thing Baylor does pretty well.
I thought Sean Tallison looked pretty good.
Was
that Saturday?
Saturday.
I mean, he wasn't pumping the upper 90s like he showed in high school. I mean, I know it's not pretty, his delivery and all those kind of things, but I thought he looked pretty good. You know, I was impressed.
You know,
by
and
Sean
they brought
Tallison.
In Brooks Pinkard after that, and that's a guy with a premium arm. He pitched very well in relief for Baylor. I mean, Texas finds ways to win low-scoring games when they need to, and they've had plenty of blowouts also.
Baylor loves to recruit guys with funky names, too. Greg Glime. How many Glimes are there out there? Please email me at John Manuel at BaseballAmerica.com or Joey Hainsfurther, of the Waco Hainsfurthers. I know he's not from Waco, but they're just some great names on that Baylor team, and there have been over the years, and I enjoy watching them for the Brooks Pinkards and Joey Hainsfurthers of the world. Real quick on the Big 12, how many bids is this league gonna get, Aaron?
It's tough to gauge because right now it seems like there's only a couple of deserving teams, but there's a vacuum out there.
I think you nailed it on Texas Tech.
Yeah,
I mean, they still have to get it done on the field, but they've been fairly steady in league play, it seems like. Mm-hmm. I think if I had to pick after Texas, I think Oklahoma and Texas Tech are the next best teams. I thought Baylor was on the move up. Not anymore. The last couple weekends, they've really faltered. Is this a four-bid league? I mean, does A&M,
I think, will get in. I think A&M's RPI is good enough. I think they're talented enough that they're going to finish pretty strong. They've got a couple of things to hang their hats on. I mean, they did win their series at Nebraska this weekend.
That was a must-win. You got to win.
It was a must-win. And frankly, they probably, it would have been nice if they had swept that series, but they lost 1-0 on Sunday.
And you talked to a scout, I think, this weekend who was talking about A&M and just how good some of their arms look.
Yeah, I mean, Stilson and Barrett Laux are just legit power arms, there's no question. And they've got, it's a fairly deep step. I like A&M okay. I mean, I don't think any team says Texas Net League is great, even Oklahoma.
Right. Two weekend series left for A&M in conference at OK State, home against Kansas State. To me, 4-2 in those two series, winning both those series would be pretty crucial because then you'd have a 500 conference record. I think under 500, you're just leaving too much. You're just giving the committee a reason to leave you out. But I think in the whole big scheme of things, there's such a vacuum of good teams.
That's it. It's hard to get to 64 teams. When I was doing the field last week, I think I ended up leaving six Big 12 teams.
Had
not because I liked six teams in the league, but because there was nobody else deserving to put in there.
Right. I mean, like even Kansas has a shot, it seems.
Sure
like.
They do. Yeah. I mean, that was a... Again, not a good series loss for them this weekend against Oklahoma State, which had been playing pretty poorly.
I believe scuffling is the word there.
Yeah, but that's two straight series losses for the Jayhawks now. So, I mean, I could see Kansas faltering down the stretch. Losing Brad Bochy, I mean, he was such a key part of their team in the first half. That's a team that I liked a lot coming into the year that I don't know if they're going to keep it going. And Kansas State, I think, I could see, I mean, as I said last week, I think I could see them faltering as well.
Right.
The schedule just doesn't set up very favorably for them.
And again, I mean, Kansas' defense, I mean, Kansas' issue is they've never been right. In the first half of the season, they were playing pretty well. They were without their number one offensive player in Thompson, their third baseman. I mean, Big 12 Triple Crown last year, correct?
That's right.
And then right when Thompson comes back, and he still wasn't clearly hitting on all cylinders, but Tony Thompson's out. Brett Bochy, their closer. Thompson comes back, Bochy gets hurt. So they're never going to be at full strength this year. And weren't they also missing Ridenour earlier this year, too, in their weekend rotation? Ridenour. So, you know, Kansas having a good season despite the fact that it's never really been at full strength. Number three team, Arizona State. We're shifting a little bit of the Pac-10. I don't think any team made as big of a statement as Arizona State did this weekend, Aaron.
Right.
They didn't just beat UCLA. They swept UCLA on the road, the big showdown series in the conference, and it really wasn't a showdown.
It was
more of a
very
beatdown.
Lopsided is what it was. I mean, Arizona State is the better team. That's obvious. And you know, UCLA's arms are really good, but they're beatable. I mean, Oregon showed that. Arizona State has now shown that. If you're patient and you know you don't chase out of the zone, you can beat Cole and Bauer. And Rasmussen's had two bad starts in a row now.
I think the bigger issue for UCLA is they're just not as explosive offensively as they were earlier in the year. I mean, I think there's such a burden on their starting pitchers. And like you said, they can be weighted out. And even with UCLA's pitching depth, they do have an excellent bullpen, as you talked about this year. To me, a college baseball team should be in any game that it gives up five runs.
Yep.
You know, when you give up five or six runs in college baseball, that should still be a winnable game.
And sure, Arizona State has a top five pitching staff also. I mean, you know, that's certainly – you have to give Arizona State credit. They're really good on the mound. But they're also better – they're just better in the lineup than UCLA. They're more versatile. They're more athletic. You know, they've got guys like – again, I mean, it's not the – Ike Davis and the Brett Wells. We talked about this in the past. It's not
right.
The physical home run hitting offense that it used to be. But, you know, Zach McPhee's having just a phenomenal year.
He's only gotten better
since we called him midseason player of the year.
He has not let up. He's making a case for full season college player of the year, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
You know, I mean, he and Drew Maggi at the top just caused so much trouble for opposing teams, and Zach Wilson's had a really nice year. And all the way down the lineup, it's just so deep, and they've got so many options on the bench that they can plug in there. And, you know, I mean, I think Tim Esme's just done a masterful job of keeping everybody happy and moving guys around, and everybody's getting playing time, and they've got a lot of dangerous players in that team, and he's found a way to maximize the talent on that roster.
Yeah, we don't decide these things in early May, but College Coach of the Year be pretty hard to choose
it's him than Tim Esme. Horton.
Yeah, I think what George Horton has done at Oregon is impressive. Oregon third in the league right now, coming off another series win this weekend. They move up in the rankings to number, where are they, 15? I mean, that's hard to believe. But on the other side of the state, Oregon State, the O-State Ballers.
Free fall.
Swept by Cal this weekend. They've lost 9 out of 10. Oregon State, is it fair to put the nail in their coffin? Are they done as far as regionals go, Aaron? They're 4-11 in the league and 21-17 overall.
You know, and I don't think their schedule gets any easier. I mean, you're in the Pac-10. There's not a lot of gimmies. But they've got Oregon coming up this weekend. The home series against Washington, obviously, I think they probably at this point have to sweep that series. Then they're at Arizona State and home against Arizona. I mean, it's hard to see them making up much ground against that schedule.
Yeah, three of their last four series are at home. But boy, go on the road to Arizona State, it's hard to see them winning that series. And basically, you probably have to win all four series
And you know what?
The Pac-10 doesn't have a great history of under 500 teams getting in the tournament.
And you know what? They're a bad offensive team. They're not just mediocre. They're bad. They're one of the worst offensive teams in a major conference in college baseball.
They're like Oregon was last year.
Oregon,
you pointed it out.
Year.
You pointed it out in the weekend preview that they're, you know, in the 200s offensively in terms of like scoring runs, which is, you know, important. You can pitch all you want, and they've pitched well this year
They're in the low 200s too. I mean, they're like 275th or something like that in runs. But I mean, it's ridiculous. They're really, really bad offensively. There's no other way to put it. And their pitching staff is not good enough to overcome that.
Somehow still 43rd, according to Boys World, in RPI. So I guess that means they're in the mix, but not for me. And when you do that, I do think people have enjoyed the stock report, the way you've been doing the top the 64-team field kind of update. And we'll see if they even get a mention in this week's stock report at BaseballAmerica.com. We've really only talked about the top three in the poll, Aaron, Let's talk about some other movers and shakers in the rankings. How about Cal State Fullerton being back in the top 10 after a disastrous start? We had a couple teams this year in our preseason top 10 that had poor starts. Rice pulled itself out of it. They're at 25, still in the rankings. They were off for exams this week. But Fullerton more than pulled itself out of it. They pulled themselves out of it, and they've just gone back on to what they usually do, which is dominating the Big West. And it seems like their pitching depth is really what's pulled them out of this, because Dylan Floro pitched great on Friday. Their freshman, Northern California guy, actually kind of a different recruit for Fullerton. They usually can stay in the OC. They don't always just stay there, but they don't necessarily always recruit outside of that Southern California area where kids just grow up wanting to be a Titan. And sometimes they've been burned when they've recruited outside of the OC. See David Cooper.
Right.
Came to Fullerton, then transferred back out of the Cal. But Dylan Floro comes in from, I believe it was Buhatch County, where I believe, as a junior, I should have looked this up before the show, but I'm pretty sure he was Brett Mooneyham's number two starter when he was, I think they were high school teammates, Brett Mooneyham at Stanford. But Floro, pitched great on the weekend, and they didn't sweep Pacific. But Fullerton, what's been the key in your mind for Fullerton getting back up from that poor opening start of the year?
I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week on the show. I think part of it is just that the lineup is more dangerous now. It's deeper. And, you know, Christian Colon hitting his stride after a few weeks into the season, I mean, that made a big difference, I think. I mean, when he was struggling, I think the whole team was struggling. And
the whole world struggles with you.
Partly, I think part of the reason he struggled is because the team was struggling, and part of the reason the team struggled is because he was struggling.
That's right.
You know, it was one of those things.
Yep.
He's just been terrific. And
their pitching seems to have really
It has gotten
gone
better.
Rankin has
generally been better. I mean, he wasn't great this week.
He's still not he's not a Friday guy anymore. Let's disabuse ourselves
not.
Of that notion.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened on Sunday. I mean, how they give up so many runs. That's just a little bizarre. It sounds like Pacific just had the bats going that day. But, Fullerton is, I mean, I think going down to San Diego and winning that game midweek was big against a red-hot San Diego team. And they had to come from behind and win it on a grand slam in the ninth inning. I think the Titans are the best team in California. And
that's saying
UCLA,
a lot.
I think, is returning to earth. I think UCLA has played above its heads in the first few weeks of the season. You know, you're 22-0. It's hard to sustain that. I think even John Savage knew that his offense, you know, was improved, but not necessarily gangbusters like it was early in the year. I mean,
like, Arizona State.
Like Arizona State.
Yeah, Arizona State's got that kind of offense.
And, you know, I think clearly Arizona State is the best team in the West, and Cal State Fullerton, for me, is number two.
I like the way you put that, and I think there is no doubt at this point that Fullerton is the better team. Their pitching is going to keep them in any game, including against a team like UCLA.
Yeah.
And really, UCLA doesn't have the kind of offense that Fullerton has, and it's taken Fullerton a little time. They had some seniors to replace. It's taken them a little time to figure out who the other complementary guys were going to be around Brown and Cologne. They figured that out. Some other teams that keep moving up the rankings, Aaron, and a couple that we've talked about the teams that have done well. Let's talk about some of the ones that have struggled. LSU, the biggest struggling team in the country right now as far as a big-name team. They're number 24 in the rankings right now for the Tigers, which is hard to believe, the defending national champions. But, Aaron, they really haven't played well, it seems like, in about a month, and they've lost seven straight. They've been swept two weekends in a row.
I believe they've lost three out of four series, too.
That's correct.
The Auburn
that is
series
correct.
As well.
And, frankly, the best thing on their resume is that early SEC series against Arkansas, which they won two out of three.
And at home as
but
well.
But I think some pretty big red flags for this team. They're not scoring a ton of runs. And Anthony Renato, something's wrong.
Yeah, that to me is the biggest issue. I mean, last year on the mound, they had Renato and Coleman, and that made it very easy to win at least two out of three every weekend right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
And this year, you know, Renato's not Renato. And they don't have a Coleman. They don't have another guy on that staff who's a reliable number two. They've tried Chris Matulis, the lefty.
Who's
They've tried Joey Bourgeois.
Yeah.
This week they even tried Matiot in the weekend rotation, which to me is the ultimate sign of desperation for Palmieri. You've got the best closer in the country, maybe. And
you can't get to him if you can't get leads.
That's it. You know, and it didn't work out. He got hammered. He gave up nine runs. I don't know what's going on over there, but
they also tried one of kind of like he did last year. It wasn't as radical, but he put some guys in the lineup. I forget the name of the left fielder who started on Saturday, but it was like his fifth game of the year. You know, they did a couple lineup deals, and like you said with Matty Ott, where you could see he was looking for a spark. Still, he's searching on his roster for a change that will get the team's momentum changed. And right now it seems like that's just going to have to come from Anthony Renato or from one of those starters we talked about, whether it's Matulis.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, someone's going to have to be better than they've been to this point.
That's the most important thing for LSU. They need their pitching. That's a great way to put it, John. I mean, they need Renato to be better, first of all. This team is not a national championship contender if Anthony Renato doesn't return to form.
That's correct. That's the bottom line.
Yep.
And are they going to be a regional host? Well, not until they turn some things around. I mean, basically it's very simple. Last year they were able to bring in some talent off there, but they're already trying that this year to try to reshape the roster. Right now the big thing is play better. Best players get to play better. You can't necessarily put this on Blake Dean or Micah Gibbs. Those two guys have been pretty good this year.
Yeah. Especially Gibbs.
Right. But, I mean, like, the rest of the team, hey, you know, Tyler Hanover, that's not acceptable. You know, we were counting on you. You can't do what you're doing and keep your, you know, I don't know what their other options are. They are, you know, they're in a spot right now, and that's why they're doing this kind of desperate things like you talked about, because they know they're not playing well. Palmieri was our coach of the year last year for a reason, not just because they won the national title, because he knows how to press those buttons.
Yeah.
So I think we expect him to be able to press the buttons or reverse them, but the biggest buttons are going to just be Anthony Renato pitching better. That's the thing. There may not be buttons.
And the guys behind him too. And you know, but the thing that for LSU that I think works in their favor is I think the remaining schedule, as we were talking about off air, the remaining schedule sets up pretty well. I mean, it's not particularly daunting. I believe two of their last three series are at home. I think they've got Kentucky and Mississippi State left, and Vanderbilt at home.
Right, that's the toughest series they have left, is either at home to Vanderbilt, which really got a tough break this weekend with the rains and the flooding.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no offense to Georgia Bulldogs fans, but when you lose a game to weather against Georgia, that's a tough break for you.
Georgia's just miserable this year, and I'm sure Georgia fans won't be offended by us saying that. I mean, they know Georgia's miserable.
That's a win. Vanderbilt has to feel like I lost two wins to Mother Nature.
It's a killer.
But LSU, home to Vanderbilt, at Kentucky, home to Mississippi State. That's what's left for them. And Mississippi State coughed one up this weekend to Ole Miss, which is suddenly the other hot team in the SEC. And, Aaron, we haven't necessarily on the podcast talked too long about South Carolina. I don't want to go too long. We're already a little bit long on the Baseball America podcast. But South Carolina, talk about consistency.
Yeah.
And these other teams, when we talked on the Top 25 meeting, we debated where to move San Diego, which has only lost once on the weekend. We debated some of the other series movers, you know, like a Virginia Tech, which has been so good on weekends in ACC against a very tough schedule. In terms of conference resume, Virginia Tech's resume is really stronger than Miami's. It's really stronger than Georgia Tech's.
Yeah.
They're ahead of Georgia Tech this weekend this week in the rankings, not necessarily ahead of Miami. But when you're talking about just resumes, I mean, South Carolina not losing an SEC series yet, no one else can come close to saying that in the league, right? Florida's lost one. Everyone else has lost more than one, I believe, in that league. It's impressive South Carolina has been that consistent. And I guess that's what you get when you have a team that's kind of built a little bit more around pitching and defense. Their athleticism is what seems to be really standing out. They're just very strong up the middle. I forget the shortstop's name who can't hit, but is an outstanding defender. And I've been told that all three of their outfielders, really the four guys they play in the outfield, are all 6'6" or better runners. So that is balls. If you don't scald the ball, if it has any hang time, it does not fall in their outfielding in South Carolina. They're really sounds like a defensive efficiency team, like what the Red Sox thought they had.
You know, and Ray Tanner's teams almost always are strong defensively, even when they had all those mashers like the Phil Dishers and the James Darnells and the Smokes. I mean, Darnell and Smoke were good on the corners.
Yeah, you're right.
Havens was okay at shortstop his last year especially. He got a lot better after his freshman year.
Right, no doubt.
You know, Ray Tanner's teams play defense, and this team does. And you know what else? They broke out the bats this weekend. I mean, they've been a pitching and defense team most of this year. That's been the key to their success. But they scored 20 runs when they needed to on Sunday in an offensive game, you know, when Alabama scored 15. It's one of those days, I think, where the ball was flying out of the park.
Oh, it was hot.
Yeah.
It was hot all over the Southeast
this
weekend. Right. If you didn't have the big-time rain like they had in Nashville, it was hot, and it was also humid, and that's like summer heating up weather. They had one of those SEC weekend, end of the weekend games.
And you know, they scored 9 runs on Friday too. So I think South Carolina, I've been waiting for the offense to kind of show this side of it, because I do think that there's some firepower in there, and that just gives them another dimension. I mean, I think they're a really dangerous team.
Yeah, that's one of those Sunday games that I would hate to go to.
Yeah.
I have to be honest with you. Went to a little bit of a cleaner game. I do give them kudos for in that heat, 8,000 people. at South Carolina. That's where they built that ballpark.
They set an attendance record this weekend for three games.
It's a showplace of a ballpark, and they're going to host a regional, and they're positioning themselves to host a super regional if they win that regional, and that would be a fun one to go to.
Yep.
I got to be honest with you, within driving distance. We're wrapping up the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, it's more of a stock report, I guess, issue than anything else. I want to touch on the Big East real quick. We've got Louisville in our top 10, they're number 9. UConn lost its win streak this week. It's still only split two games with Pitt. Is that league still shaping up as a three-bid league? Is there a chance for more?
I don't think so. I think it's safely a two-bid league, and still probably at this point I think it's a three-bid league because, again, of the vacuum we talked about. But I think Rutgers has fallen back, and they got hammered by Louisville in a sweep this weekend.
They're 21-20, which is surprising to see.
All of a sudden, they've
just
fallen apart. I mean, they were swept the last 2 weeks by UConn. And
what about
and
South Florida, that plucky bunch?
No.
No.
I mean, it's UConn, Louisville, and Pitt. I mean, St. John's is the one dark horse team, actually. I will say that St. John's is I think, a pretty decent veteran club. The problem is the RPI. They're 83rd. I mean, that it just sinks them. I mean, unless they win the conference tournament. Maybe, I suppose, if St. John's or somebody like that wins the conference tournament, maybe this is a good get for. I mean,
because there's so many leagues. I mean, the Big West is a two-bid league, it looks like, with Irvine as the second. I mean, maybe.
I mean, Long Beach was probably the third team in the Big West, and they've been maddeningly inconsistent and lost a series to a miserable Cal Poly team this weekend. I mean,
that was
Cal
shocking.
Poly, John, is 12-27.
I know. I couldn't believe that. I saw that in my inbox this weekend. I could not believe that of all weekends, Cal Poly decided this is the weekend they're going to rise up.
And I caught some flack from Long Beach fans last week because I didn't have Long Beach in the discussion for regionals, but guess what? I mean, you can't lose to Cal Poly if you're.
I believe
regional.
The term is wear it.
Yeah, wear it is right.
I believe that's the operative phrase here. Conference USA still a one bid league. I mean, East Carolina won a weekend series against Marshall, but couldn't finish off a sweep. Memphis and Marshall are tied for second in this league.
How about Tulane just.
They get the gas face.
This is two straight weekends.
For an early 90s reference of the day.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, they got swept by Southern Miss this weekend. They lost the series to Memphis last week. Tulane's done. I mean,
has Southern Miss got a chance? 8-7 in the league, 25-17.
Boy, their RPI isn't great either. I mean, they're what are they, 76?
That's Southern California. Southern Mississippi is, my search was not quick enough here. Southern Miss is 66.
Okay.
I suppose Southern Miss has a shot, but they're not.
It's not at large territory, and I don't understand. I mean, I don't see how they're gonna improve their RPI. Where's the opportunity to make headway?
Yeah, when you're playing in the league, and the league is
bad.
They
do have Matt Rice and East Carolina. I suppose if they win both those series, maybe they're in the discussion.
To me, they have to win their last three series. Or, like, say those nine last games, they go 6-3 in the league. That would probably help your RPI more than it would hurt it. Mississippi State twice. At least you're an SEC team you're playing. Maybe that won't kill their RPI. I have to plug them into the needs report, Aaron, and see what that does for Southern Miss.
Yeah.
But the Conference USA, the Big West, are going to provide fewer teams than usual. I still think it's there for the SEC to send nine, even though there might not be nine deserving teams.
Yeah, who's
teams.
The ninth? Now, it certainly isn't Kentucky anymore. I mean, maybe, I guess the only team that's in the discussion as a ninth team in that league is Tennessee now, which is actually won a series against Kentucky. I mean, all of a sudden, Tennessee would be the ninth team, and I don't think right now they're a regional team either. But
I think they are the ninth team, though, because Alabama's the eighth team, and Alabama's not any great shakes. They got Florida coming up. Tennessee at Georgia next weekend. Again, chance to make some hay. You got to win that series if you're Tennessee.
Yeah.
And honestly, that would quiet. We don't talk too much about this on the show, but we hear all these coaching rumors, and I'm tired of hearing the Tennessee one, to be honest with you. The coach, Todd Raleigh's only been there for 3 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. Three years, right? I'm a little tired of hearing Todd Raleigh rumors. The guy's been there 3 years. You know, kind of give the guy a chance. But
he inherited a mess.
He did inherit a mess. I mean, Rod Delmonico had done a good job there, but that program was kind of in win-now mode for a long time there. And, I would love for Tennessee to continue this rally toward the end of the year because they do have talent. And just to quiet some of that mess. I get, honestly, it's not like I know Todd Raleigh too well. I just get a little tired. A coach has been there for 3 years. I would rather not hear rumors about his impending demise when the guy's been there for three seasons. It doesn't seem like that's
there are coaches right now without jobs who are already openly lobbying for Todd Raleigh's job, and he still has a job right now.
It's, what's the word? Not classless, because it's a little too strong. It's just uncouth. Yep. That's what I was looking for. It's a little uncouth to be talking about things that way, and that's why I brought it up. We hear it constantly, and it's a little frustrating. I think the other team I wanted to bring in, I wanted to mention also, Aaron, was we talked about the Sun Belt a lot on the podcast. I'm for some reason fascinated by the Sun Belt. Florida Atlantic sweeps Arkansas State this weekend. Florida Atlantic seems like they brought, and you wrote about them in a weekend preview a couple weeks ago.
It was strikes last week.
Oh, it was just last week. But here's a team that's gotten kind of hot. I guess what I wonder about is, are there any teams, my real big picture question is, are there any teams outside the usual suspects who've got a chance to host a regional and break through or go, teams that aren't usual suspects? Like, could a UConn, could they host? Oregon, we know, can host at that ballpark, and we know they have the money. They're Oregon. They're gonna spend the money.
Oregon, to me, seems like the team that's surging remarkably. If they can keep this up, I think they are probably in position to host.
I mean, someone else has got to host on the West. You figure Arizona State's going to host.
UCLA.
You figure UCLA. Well, Fullerton.
Probably.
UCLA probably, but they never have hosted that I can think of. I mean, I know Jackie Robinson Ballpark can. I don't know if UCLA ever has. To be honest, I'd have to look that up. I can't think of it in my memory where UCLA's ever hosted. That's one of the reasons why they've probably only gone to Omaha twice.
Yeah. I have searched, looked into that, though, and they are prepared to host it.
Right. I do know they're prepared. If they keep on this free fall, though, I mean, Oregon's
right now, where they're in the conference standings, it makes it a little tricky. That's
I would say Oregon's more likely to host.
Really?
I would. I think that the money is not going to be a question, and the newness of getting a regional team to Oregon, that resume is pretty strong. I guess I'm wondering, like, does a team like UConn have a chance to host? Is San Diego going to try to host at San Diego State like they have in the past?
I don't think you'll see that.
I don't see that either. I didn't think that went well the time before. Yeah. Who's maybe an off-the-board potential host? I don't think Florida Atlantic is. Is there a team that's an off-the-board host? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here.
You mentioned UConn. I actually heard some people this weekend talking, I think half-jokingly, about going up to Storrs for the Connecticut Regional. But, they're in the mix. They've got the RPI, I think. I mean, I don't think they're going to host, but it's possible. I mean, I don't know about their facilities or if they could host at a minor league ballpark or something.
Good question.
I'll be honest, I've never, until this weekend, really debated, really looked into whether UConn has the facilities to host a regional because, let's face it, they've never been in the discussion or even close
to
it.
I think you're right. I don't know if they have the ballpark there. I think they are close enough if they want to do a minor league one.
Yeah. There's a lot of minor league parks in Connecticut.
There are, and I'm pretty sure Norwich is the closest one to Storrs, if I know my Nutmeg State geography. I believe it's Norwich.
New Britain, maybe?
Are they closer to Hartford, or are they closer to the eastern part of the state? I thought Storrs was tucked away in the northeast part of the Nutmeg State.
It's a tiny state. It doesn't really matter where it is.
You're right. You're like 30 minutes from anywhere in Connecticut, basically. I would love to see some of these teams fly into Hartford and then take the train, something like that.
Fly
to New York and then take the train to the Storrs Regional. That would be awesome. I'm pretty sure, actually, UConn hosted like in the late 80s or early 90s. I think this because I'm pretty sure North Carolina played a regional there back
in
the day.
Is that right? Wow.
Pretty sure it did and did not fare well in a regional up there when I was in college. That's the Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's Aaron.
Here's one more, John.
Please.
How about Virginia Tech? I mean, I don't know about the facilities there, but aren't they
just
their resume
lights.
Host-worthy?
The resume is host-worthy. They just got lights in the last few years, so I think they actually could host that way. Because, like, Cal, to my recollection, does not have lights,
have lights,
can't host. I would have a hard time seeing the committee having a team, both, because Blacksburg is not that far from Virginia, number one. But number two, if you're flying teams in, it's hard to fly to Blacksburg.
Oh, yeah.
Travel, cost-wise, I mean, unless Virginia Tech is a slam dunk, they finish in the top 3-4 in the ACC, and then they win the conference tournament, which is certainly plausible. Then I think they have to host, and they certainly have the money. The Virginia Tech, they had the football money; they could put the bid in. I have a hard time seeing them as a host because I don't know what their facility's like. I don't think it's great, and their fan interest has not been tremendous this year.
You're right.
It's in contrast to a new team like Oregon, where the fans really have jumped on that bandwagon.
They drew 3,700, I think, this weekend at Oregon.
And for the West, that's just tremendous.
Huge for the
West, honest with you. That's big time. So I could see Virginia Tech. I see UConn more, to be honest with you. I think the committee likes to put
– you're right.
And let's be honest with you. ESPN doesn't pick the teams, but ESPN, if they're going to do a regional, they would love to do it in their backyard.
Heck.
They would play up the UConn regional to the hilt. And UConn's a good brand name, and there are a lot of eyeballs in the Northeast that I think would be interested. That would be good TV to have a regional up there. That's not what should decide it, but I do think that UConn is on the cusp of being worthy. I think it would not be a bad thing to have new blood like a UConn, like an Oregon. I think we know that Texas, Virginia, some of these are going to be regional hosts, and I think South Carolina is going to be a very lucrative regional host.
Yep. There are some locks out there for sure.
I think there are. Let's take some questions real quick before we wrap up the podcast off our Facebook page. The Portland Baseball Softball Facebook page wants to know, big West Coast Conference Series in Portland coming up this week. Any chance of the WCC being a multi-bid league this year?
Not unless San Diego doesn't win the automatic bid, because Portland's had a great year, but their RPI is not even close to being at-large worthy. They haven't played a good non-conference schedule. I mean,
in fact, they played a bad non-conference schedule, which is understandable.
Utah. I mean,
it's understandable considering their geography. They've got USD this weekend at home, and they still have to go to San Francisco and to Gonzaga. So even if they win this conference series against San Diego, they're one game back, and they could put themselves in position to win the league regular season. As you pointed out last week, no more conference tournament there.
Right.
And they still have to go win two series on the road to keep up with the Toreros. It just seems like it's not likely. It's possible, but not likely.
San Diego is the most talented team in that league, and I think San Diego is going to win that league, and I think it's going to be a one-bid league.
I agree with you. Portland is number 80 in the RPI, not exactly advantageous for
at-large. They're a great story, but they don't have any chance at an at-large bid.
We've also got a question, the question from Chris Delano, who we've touched on the Facebook page. They basically want to know about Texas being number 2 versus Virginia. I think that he said that Texas being number 2 is not enough credit for Texas. I think both of us kind of think that's kind of ridiculous, Aaron, to be honest with you. But I think we've talked about there's really a dime's worth of difference between teams 1, 2, and 3 this year. I think Arizona State, with 5 losses all season, has as much a claim on being number 1 as Texas. They've both had 20-game win streaks. Is there any difference between those top three teams right now? I guess a better question might be, if you were ranking them in terms of who you think is the best team, the best win play show, however you want to put it, what's the best team out of Virginia, Texas, Arizona State?
I would probably go Texas, Virginia, ASU, but it's close, and I could see seriously if you argue the opposite way, I would be fine with that. I mean, I think that they're all very close.
I really don't know how to make a determination there, because Texas's offense still leaves me wanting. I mean, Baylor can pitch pretty well, but they scored 10 runs all weekend. And
but they scored more. They've scored more than that in most of their conference series.
They have.
And
they've been fairly explosive lately, actually.
Their pitching is just – it might be the best pitching staff ever in college baseball, John.
Ooh, now that's saying something.
By the end of the year, I mean, if they keep this up, 2.17.
The bar – I understand that about the ERA, the bar is Rice. The bar is Rice 03.
Yeah.
Let's face it, is Rice 03. I know that they only produced 2 big leaguers in Jeff Niemann and David Arzma, but Arzma was your closer, and your top 3 picks all went. So that's 4 first-round picks on that staff. 3 weekend starters, Umber, Niemann, Townsend. Well, they weren't even just the only 3 weekend starters. It was 2 weekend starters and the midweek guy, basically.
I think Texas,
and then Arzma out of the bullpen.
I think Texas has 2 first-round picks with Youngman and Workman. I do think Workman will be a first-round pick.
I think you're right.
And I think Cole Green is not quite a first-round pick.
He's Philip Umber-esque, is what he is.
Yeah, it's a good call. And Chance Ruffin is just as dominant, or more dominant, than David Arzman.
Chance Ruffin's been better performance-wise than David Arzman.
He might not throw 99 like David Arzman.
Right.
But as far as performance and dominance at the college level, it's hard to beat what Chance Ruffin's done.
That's true. All that said, Jeff Niemann's the best pitcher out of all those guys. He went 17-0 as a sophomore in 2003. You can't do better than that. That's actually the best record, and I think his second most wins ever. It's one of the best seasons in college baseball history, which Jeff Niemann did in 2003.
But the fact that
they won a championship. Let's put that out there too.
If Texas doesn't win a championship, then
right.
But the fact that we're having this debate, and it's a lively debate, shows that's why Texas to me is number 1.
I think it's a debate to be had, and I think that you could make a very strong case that if Texas wins a national championship, that will be the best pitching staff of all time in college baseball, and that is awesome. We have to appreciate that, what we're seeing out of Texas. For all we're talking about splitting hairs, this has been a long podcast. We need to wrap it up. But they are not just in the discussion. They're on the very, very short list So I think I agree with you. I think if I had to pick a team right now, I think I'd pick Texas.
And that said, if Texas and Virginia played a three-game series, I have no idea who would win that series. It would be extremely compelling because Virginia's got very good pitching also, and they've got a much better offense.
And Arizona State is right there with Virginia in terms of offense. And defensively, kind of have to like what they do. Arizona State, they're so athletic and versatile, Aaron.
And so is Virginia, though. I mean, those two teams are comparable athletically. And defensively, I do think Virginia has more firepower in the lineup than Arizona State. And I like Virginia's frontline pitching actually more than Arizona State's.
And the gap between those three teams and the rest of the country to me is pretty serious.
I agree with you.
I think it's pretty serious. All right, great podcast. A little long, but great podcast. And a good last question from Chris, even though he doesn't agree with us. Thanks for the feedback at the Facebook page. And we want to remind you we're coming to you from the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook because when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. Aaron Fitz chat can be found at BaseballAmerica.com this afternoon. And, of course, the college blog is always open. So, for Aaron Fitz, I'm John Manuel. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. So long, everybody.